Hello, and happy Valentine's Day. You're listening to Romeo And, a podcast about masculinities, nice guys, sexism, and what it means to be a man in our society today. I'm your host, Street Saint. I'm sure you've all heard of the Holy Trinity. I mean, right, there's the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, but I meant the other Holy Trinity. I guess there are a lot of them, aren't there? But what I'm thinking about is the mind, body, and spirit Holy Trinity. And I love this school of thought because it encompasses so much. You've got the mind with all of your thoughts and how you learn and process information, your personality and temperament. You have the body, the physical, how you look, your strength, your agility, your health. And then you have the spirit, that which we don't really have an explanation for. Your personal preferences, why you like the color blue over the color red, and why seeing a beautiful work of art or a natural phenomenon can leave you breathless. And since relationships and dating are topics that are constantly on my mind, I decided to piece together my own Trinity as a means to better explain our natural inclinations as well as why we look for what we look for in partners. Now, dating coaches always talk about finding a partner that complements your personality and improving yourself to better suit your partner's desires. Well, I took this advice and asked myself the question, what do people actually want out of their relationships? As you might have guessed by now, I came up with three answers: emotional support, economic utility, and physical satisfaction. Or in short, the emotional, the economical, and the physical. It's not quite mind, body, and spirit, but let me break it down. So the first thing people want is emotional support. And basically that's a partner who will feed their emotional hunger. And naturally this can manifest in a number of different ways, from caring for them when they're sick, holding their hand when life gets tough, telling them how awesome they are when they're feeling defeated, or just simply saying I love you and meaning it. It's about being there emotionally when your partner wants and needs you to be. But not everyone wants a lot of the emotional. Some people don't like getting a bunch of hugs. And for some people, PDA and lovey-dovey pet names are vomit-worthy. And some people are totally fine to be away from their significant other for months and still be perfectly committed to the relationship. And that's where the other two elements come in. The second thing people want out of their relationships is the economical. And now I'm not talking about somebody who's just going to be there to pay all their bills, but even that's not a far-fetched idea. But what I'm really referring to is a broader sense of support, providing resources, which can translate to money, but could also refer to time and investment. For example, the ability to raise and care for children is a resource that a lot of people look for in a partner. But then it could also be the ability to sing and perform, or it could be the ability to help them start their own business, or someone who can change their tires when they get flat. This is why people really want to know what a potential partner does for a living, because that can determine just how resourceful they can be to them. But again, not everyone is interested in what the partner does or how much money they make, especially if the person feels they're independent and can take care of themselves. So the last thing that people want out of their relationships is the physical. And yes, I am talking about sex. But again, that's not all it's about. Sometimes the physical is just having another body to do things with. Taking long walks on the beach, for example. But then there are also a lot of things that people just don't like doing alone, like going to the movies, or going on trips, or going to parties, or even visiting family, when you remove both the emotional and economical aspects of a relationship, you're essentially left with friends with benefits, where the actual person that you're with doesn't really matter so long as they're a warm body. And this is why there is a market for prostitution and hookers. But as you probably put together by now, a good and healthy relationship is going to have some combination of these three elements. And now that you know what they are, it's up to you to figure out what your happy balance would look like between you and your partner. If you're super financially successful, then you're probably set in the economical aspect. So maybe you want someone who's just really emotionally available and really likes to cuddle. Or if you're not a very touchy-feely person, you might be looking for someone who has a steady income because you have enough money problems on your own. Or maybe you have the income, but you just feel really lonely sometimes and want someone to remind you that you're loved. Whatever the case may be, take some time to really analyze your life and what strikes you as desirable in a partner. But you don't want to just stop there, though. Because knowing yourself and what you want is only half the battle. The other half is figuring out what you have to offer to your partner. For example, do you have a stable job, or do you have a special skill or talent? Or do you just have a lot of time that you can dedicate to a relationship? In that case, you're going to want to look for people who are interested in the economical aspects of a relationship. Are you a really outgoing person or just really sensitive? Do people often describe you as empathetic or charming or romantic? Are you really good at giving gifts or making people feel welcome? Then you'll probably be a good match for anyone looking for the emotional. And if you know all the best moves and people call you a wizard in the sack, or you're the best at giving massages and you know how to lead all the ballroom dance styles, then you can use those skills to attract people looking for physical connection. There's no right or wrong answer. It's simply about identifying your strengths and skills and figuring out what you feel is missing in your life. You might be really good in one or two areas and are looking for someone who can complement your strengths. Or you might be a jack of all trades, or triple threat, and you're looking for someone who shares your versatility. Or it might be that you have a super high sex drive and want someone who can match or even exceed your desire. But just because you've got A and B doesn't necessarily mean you're looking for someone who has C. Really, this is just some framework so you can come up with a better idea about who you are and what you're looking for. But if you're super into this relationship trinity idea, consider making yourself a little chart for yourself. On the one side, you have what you're looking for in a partner, mostly A and a little bit of B and C, or mostly A and C and a little B, or a little bit of everything. But then on the other side, you have what you think you can offer to your partner. And if you're like me, you might get stuck. You might ask yourself, what do I bring to my relationships? And if that's the case, don't feel hard on yourself. All you've done is identified a goal for yourself, which is perfect. In fact, it's exactly how the system is supposed to work. Now you have to decide what you want to be for your partner and work to get better in those areas. Do you want to be a caretaker, a provider, or a companion? A confidant, a sugar daddy, or an activity partner? Do you want to plan the trips, finance them, or simply join in on them? For me, I would like my partner to be well-rounded, but I think the emotional aspect is what I long for the most. However, I know I'm not a very emotional person, as much as I would like to be. And though I do see myself as being there for my partner physically, I think the most notable aspect of myself is my generosity. When it comes to relationships, I don't hold back. And so I should find ways to advertise that more when I'm looking for relationship partners. And just how you advertise your most notable attributes really depends on what specifically you're offering. For example, if I want to demonstrate my economical strengths, I might look to get the tab when on dates, or surprise my partner with things I know they want. But then, like I said, it doesn't have to be about money all the time either. If you don't have the money to offer, consider offering your time or your unique skill. You could consider writing your partner a song or a poem, or offering to help them with a difficult project they're working on. Your ideal partner will be someone who is receptive to what you have to give. But that's as far as I'll get into it now. There's a whole lot more I can say about the Trinity, but I want to make sure that I have time to talk about the movie of the week. And this week, I'm going to be continuing off the conversation we had in the last episode by discussing the 2002 indie film Secretary. That's coming up next here on Romeo Ann. In the last episode of the show, we discussed 50 Shades of Grey and why it's so terrible. Today, I'm jumping on the bandwagon once again and making the comparison between 50 Shades of Grey to the 2002 indie film Secretary by Steven Sheinberg. And I feel kind of bad doing it because, though there aren't many mainstream movies about BDSM out there, there are more than just these two. And they're so different from each other that it feels like the only reason they get matched up against each other is the fact that they're the only S&M movies people actually know about. And though all of that is true, one of the main reasons I decided to look at Secretary is because it is actually a pretty fantastic movie, in my opinion. And I really wanted a chance to rewatch it and talk about it on the show. I'll be honest, the first time I saw the movie, the only reason I watched it was for the boobies. I was 15 at the time. But I ended up taking in a whole lot more than I thought, since I had to sit through the whole thing before I could actually get to the naked boobies part. Sorry, spoilers. I really wasn't paying much attention to what was going on, but I did find the story oddly enticing, despite my teenage preoccupation with seeing Maggie Gyllenhaal nude. And so, when I saw the movie again when I was older, I gained a deeper appreciation for the story. And just watching the whole thing a third time has made me see a lot of myself in Gyllenhaal's character Lee. But that's neither here nor there. Because as much as I love the movie, as compared to 50 Shades especially, there are still a lot of problem areas from the perspective of consent, domination, gender dynamics, and sex in general. And naturally, I'm going to address a lot of that here. Additionally, like I said, I'm going to contrast the movie with 50 Shades of Grey, but mainly in order to highlight some of the things it does better, just to further illustrate the points I made about the movie in the last episode. But before we continue, spoilers. Yeah, buddy. I already ruined it by saying there's boobs toward the end, but if anything, I feel like that will just make a lot of you want to see the movie even more, so... yeah. Do yourself a favor and watch the movie so I don't ruin everything else for you. Moving on. Okay, so first let's talk about the obvious red flags surrounding the story of Secretary. The movie centers around Lee, played by Maggie Gyllenhaal, who is a woman recently released from a mental facility. She was hospitalized for her cutting behavior. And in the beginning of the movie, she has a whole kit with sharpeners, iodine, bandages, and a little ballerina statue that she uses as a makeshift razor. And every time her alcoholic father gets out of hand, she reaches for her kit to numb the pain and bring the emotional wounds to the surface. Some serious and heavy stuff going on here. Self-harm, alcoholism, domestic abuse, depression, all in the span of a few minutes. But we establish Lee's character as troubled, to say the least. Of course, as you may recall from the last episode of the show, I said it was a problem that 50 Shades of Grey seemed to insinuate that an interest in BDSM stems from a traumatic childhood. Here, it seems like the same thing is happening. And it is a problem when it seems like childhood trauma is used as an excuse for fetishism, but Secretary doesn't make such a direct association like 50 Shades does. Christian Grey basically says, I was dominated by a woman when I was a kid, and now domination is the only way I get sexual pleasure. He literally just spells it out like that. Whereas in Secretary, Lee just happens to come from a traumatic household, and she happens to use self-harm as a means to cope. And then she ends up using masochism as her anti-drug. There is some relationship between these things, but it's more complicated than, I was abused as a child, now I'm into BDSM. Because BDSM is complicated, and thinking there is a cause for it is like thinking there's a cause for homosexuality. It's just not that simple. Okay, so then Lee goes to a typing class, finds out that she's pretty good at it, and starts looking for a job as a secretary. She finds an ad in the paper for a paralegal's office, and boom, she meets Mr. E. Edward Grey. That's right, my friends. Our hero protagonist meets and starts working for a Mr. Grey, who she immediately takes a liking to. And yes, I'm still talking about the movie Secretary and not 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, you're already writing a fanfiction of Twilight. You could at least change the name of your dominant leading man so it's not so blatantly obvious where you copied your ideas from. But, you know, no judgment here. In any case, Edward Grey and Lee develop a fairly non-conventional relationship, much like the relationship between Christian Grey and Anna. But the relationship between Grey and Lee, Edward and Lee, crap, now it just sounds like I'm talking about Twilight. There's no good way to... The relationship between E. Edward Grey and Lee is actually more problematic than the one in 50 Shades. Because at least Anna wasn't working for Christian Grey. Not only is Edward predatory towards Lee and a man of authority, he's actually her boss. Lee depends on his employment in order to get her paycheck. So yes, there is some pressure on Lee to make sure he's happy, or else she could be out of a job. And it's already tough enough to get a job when you're a woman, and freshly released from a mental institution. And this is an aspect of harassment and consent that's often overlooked. A man can justify to himself that his behavior is fine because the women he targets are receptive to it. Although, if these women that you're talking to are working directly under you and are afraid to lose their jobs if they upset you, then yeah, they're probably willing to overlook a little sexual harassment. They might even smile and laugh with you as you do it, so long as you continue to pay off their college loans. It's something that I've mentioned on the show a lot, how people, especially men, can mistake politeness for sexual interest. A guy might slap a woman on her ass and see how she reacts. If she smiles and says, "Hey, cut it out," he might think, "Huh, she's totally DTF." When in reality, she might be thinking, "All I have to do is survive 3 more months of this internship and I can finish school and find a real job." So yeah, it's important to look at these elements of the story and put them into perspective, even though that's not actually what's happening with these particular characters. P.S. I may have been a little harsh on 50 Shades when I talked about how Christian tells Anna what to eat. I mean, the way he does it is still pretty messed up contextually, but this is an aspect of BDSM that can offer some degree of stimulation and roleplay, as we see demonstrated in Secretary, when Edward tells Lee to eat 4 peas, a scoop of mashed potato, and as much ice cream as she wants. The difference is, Lee and Edward were using this food denial as a kind of sexual play. Christian used it as a way to make sure Anna stayed thin. Basically, he told her what to eat for the sake of being in control of her life, which is kind of fucked up. But now that I've already started contrasting the two stories, let's go ahead and dive right in, shall we? Let's talk specifically about how both stories tackle the same types of issues. But first, I want to talk about the characters, starting with Mr. and Mr. Grey. Christian Grey, from 50 Shades of Grey, is a billionaire businessman. He has everything a person could want, and anything he doesn't have, he can buy, including Anastasia. In reality, he's a super creeper. He stalks the women he's interested in, he buys them expensive gifts to force them to give him attention, he traces their phones when they won't tell him where they are, and he abducts them when they're passed out drunk. Oh yeah, and he's a dominant. The other Grey, Edward Grey, from Secretary, is also a super creeper. He hires women specifically so he can dominate them. Although, if you remember from 50 Shades of Grey, Christian seems to only have supermodels working for him in his office. But anyway, Edward hires these women, takes pictures of them, keeps those pictures filed away for his own personal use, and then fires them when he has his fill. Fires the women, but also sets the pictures on fire also. Anyway, it's all kind of fucked up. But the difference that we see between Edward and Christian is that though they both have the best interests of Lee and Anna at heart, respectively, Edward is actually more like a human being, more than Christian is anyway. Christian doesn't even ever seem to do any work. All he seems to do is follow around and keep tabs on Anastasia. What his business actually is and how he built it is never really discussed. He just happens to be super young with a lot of money and nothing important to do with his time other than prey on impressionable women. Edward similarly uses his business as a front to maintain his secretarial bondage ring, but underneath all of his creepy behavior, we see that there is some inner conflict in him. He's embarrassed and apologetic about what he does, and he wants to make sure Lee is actually happy. The disconnect between the two characters is evident when you just look at how they approach the protagonist. Christian is not interested in romance. He just wants to dominate Anastasia and selfishly tell her what to do. He says he wants her to choose this for herself, but he continuously forces himself on her without her consent. Edward, on the other hand, though he's not as explicit about consent as Christian, actually leaves Lee way more room to make her own decisions. Though you can argue that he forces himself on her, especially when you take into consideration the employee-boss relationship dynamic I was talking about earlier, he actually takes most of his cues from Lee herself. Lee is a cutter before she and her Mr. Grey meet, while Anastasia has no experience with masochism before meeting Christian. Lee is a sub before she and Edward met, as evidenced by her desire to follow orders, even when the work she does is boring or below her. Anastasia resists Christian's attempts to introduce her to BDSM, seemingly at every step of the way, and only ever agrees to anything reluctantly. After Lee has been working for Edward for a while, he asks her to see if she can find a document that he may have thrown into the trash accidentally. It's an innocent enough request, albeit unpleasant sounding to most, but Lee enthusiastically agrees to dig through the trash for him, literally climbing into a dumpster and sifting through garbage until she finds what he asks for. She could have just looked in the trash bins around the office, recognized that it was nowhere to be found, and returned to Edward saying that it was probably in the dumpster already. At which point he would have told her, "No big, I found another copy," and that would be that. But Lee is not that kind of woman. And it's only when Edward sees Lee's willingness to climb into a trash can that his dominant behavior escalates. At every step of the way, Lee demonstrates to Edward that she is a willing participant. She essentially asks to be dominated, just as much, in fact, more than Edward actually dominates her. Not like Anastasia, who seems uncomfortable with the whole idea from the start. This is the difference in consent that I've been talking about. The difference between Anastasia's, well, I guess so, and Lee's, yes, and harder this time. Throughout the movie, we see signs of reciprocation between Lee and Edward. It's not just Edward telling Lee what to do. It's also Lee seeking out Edward for either punishment or rewards. Early on, Edward notices that Lee is a cutter and approaches her about it, after establishing her receptiveness to his domination. He then uses this master-slave relationship to end her self-harming behavior. He just straight up tells her to stop cutting herself. And Lee, having such a passionate interest in following Edward's orders, does her best to comply, especially when Edward shows that he's willing to dole out the punishment on her behalf. Something that Secretary has taught me is that masochism is a lot like masturbation. What we really want is for someone to do it to us, but if no one else is available, we just have to do it to ourselves. But let's take a step back and talk a little bit more about Edward. Another key disconnect between him and Christian is what they get out of their relationship with the leading lady of their respective stories. In Edward's case, he admits to Lee that he's a shy person, like she is, even though he's a lawyer and a dominant. He struggles with himself because he wants to feel dominant and in control, but he just doesn't. His relationship with his secretaries, as well as his decision to become a lawyer, allows him to see himself as in control of his life. I also think it's notable that his ex-wife seems like a domineering woman, and I can definitely see how he might have sought that out in his life, a woman who would dominate him. He probably chose to marry her because submission felt natural to him. But he wasn't happy, or maybe she wasn't happy with him, or both. I don't know. They didn't really get into it. But in any case, Lee makes Edward happy because she allows him to feel like he's in control. And Edward makes Lee happy because he makes her feel productive and skilled. And he physically punishes her when she feels ashamed of herself. But when you look at 50 Shades of Grey, these elements of Anna and Christian's characters are removed. Instead, you have Anna, who somewhat reluctantly gets into this whole bondage thing, and Christian, who already sees himself as dominant. He's actually in control of everything in his life, so he has no reason to force himself on the unsuspecting Anastasia, other than a selfish desire to control her life. When Christian dumps Anastasia, she says, "Huh, well, that was weird. Oh well," and then moves on with her life, until Christian forces himself back into it. When Edward dumps Lee, she sinks back into depression. She begs him to keep punishing her. She asks him what she did wrong and what she can do to get back together with him. And finally, she demonstrates her devotion to him by going on a hunger strike for 3 days. Although, it is kind of fucked up that he did that to her. The fact that he tells her to sit at his desk and not move until he comes back is one thing, and if she were there for 24 hours or something, I could see him being like, "Wow, she's really committed to me," or something. But he just lets her sit there the whole weekend, until the entire neighborhood shows up and camps outside trying to convince her to go home and eat. Not to mention he breaks up Lee's marriage. Naturally, this was mainly Lee's decision, but I can't help but feel for the nice guy who is once again cuckolded in this whole situation. Of course, there's always the nice guy, the Baxter. This time, his name is Peter, and he is in love with Lee. And he can't understand why she won't love him back. Although, in Secretary, the nice guy is a friendly, kind, and accommodating guy. He's not written as the villain of the story just because he's not the leading man, like Jose in 50 Shades. Peter is a true Baxter. Perfectly nice, but just not what Lee's looking for. And so he begs Lee to come back to him, but she sends him away in favor of the man who leaves her to starve at his desk. Again, like what I talked about with 50 Shades, this whole thing makes for a powerful story. Under closer scrutiny, we can see how problematic it is, but it's the drama that makes the story exciting to us. So, as much as we can criticize Edward for leaving Lee sitting at his office for 3 days straight, we also have to recognize that this is fiction. It never actually happened. So we might enjoy the story even if we don't always agree with everything the characters do. And so, once again, my request of you is to take the media you consume with a grain of salt. You don't have to feel bad about enjoying a story even if you don't agree with the message it sends or the conventions it uses. Just like I said about 50 Shades of Grey, don't be like Mr. Grey, Christian or Edward. Even though, in my opinion, Edward is a more relatable character, he is still enough of a dick to warrant me saying to avoid what he does. Although, like I always say, you should really just be yourself. You aren't perfect. No one is perfect. So, if it turns out you actually are a lot like Edward, that's actually fine, so long as you recognize your faults and work to improve them, so that, you know, you're not hiring women at your business so you can sexually dominate them. Because, you know, that's not cool. But that's it for this episode of Romeo, and if you have a suggestion for a movie you want me to review, or you have your own story you'd like me to analyze on the show, just send me a summary of it via email, contact@stsaint.com, or leave me a brief message at 516-514-7878. And I'll be sure to get back to you right away. Also, be sure to follow me on social media, like Romeo and on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter @street_saint. New episodes of Romeo and are published every other week, so make sure you get every episode when it's released by subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the podcatcher of your choice. But if you do nothing else, just go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. There's nothing more valuable for the show than getting a bunch of great ratings from all of you guys. But thanks again for listening. I am Street Saint, and I'll see you next time.